3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
President Biden calls for the release of a Wall Street Journal reporter arrested in Russia. And the indictment of former President Donald Trump is deepening partisan divides.
They're very red hot right now, and those were growing well before Donald Trump became president for various reasons, but it sort of put it on steroids, the Trump era.
Plus, the Treasury Department issues new rules for claiming EV credits. It's Friday, March 31st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. A lawyer for former President Donald Trump says his client would never take a plea deal and that he was shocked by a Manhattan grand jury's indictment. Joe Tacopina appeared on major TV networks to defend Trump, calling the charges unprecedented and unfair. As we've been reporting, a Manhattan grand jury has voted to indict Trump, but the charges are not yet public, and the expectation is that they will remain sealed until after Trump makes an initial appearance in court. Trump is expected to surrender on Tuesday. Meanwhile, the divergence of opinions on the indictment is again laying bare deep national divisions. Some Republicans, especially the strongest of Trump supporters, have said the investigation is politically motivated, as Trump himself has claimed, while some Democrats have reaffirmed that no one is above the law. Joining me now to further discuss reactions is Wall Street Journal national political reporter Alex Leary. Thanks for being here, Alex.
You're welcome.
So let's get into some more specifics here of how this is playing out within the Republican Party, because there are differences, of course, between Trump's stronger supporters and other Republicans in the party.
Yes, there are nuances. By and large, however, most Republicans are rallying to his side and calling this politically motivated. They're also questioning the wisdom of bringing such a case and the merits of it. We've seen this before with major controversies, including former President Trump, and it speaks to his sort of support among the party's rank-and-file voters. Now, he does have plenty of Republican detractors, but they've been largely reluctant at times like this to speak out. For instance, we're seeing some notable Senate Republicans who haven't weighed in on this yet.
And then on the Democratic side of the aisle, there's been messaging about due process, respect for the law, reminders that no one is above the law, including the president, former president. How else would you characterize what we're hearing from Democrats?
Right. There's a lot of calls to respect the process and for calm, but there is some trepidation among Democrats, largely privately, that this hush money case is weak or at least not as significant as other legal problems Mr. Trump faces, including January 6th and a case in Georgia involving him and his allies' efforts to overturn the election results there.
Alex, what does this range of reactions tell us about our national divisions?
That they're very red hot right now. And those were growing well before Donald Trump became president for various reasons, but it sort of put it on steroids, the Trump era. I remember from almost day one, there were large demonstrations. There were giant women's rallies in Washington and elsewhere across the country. People have really had polarized views about President Trump. And this episode just is exacerbating those further.
Is this indictment likely to change any minds or lead to further entrenchment on both sides of pre-existing views here?
That's a tough call. There could be some Republicans who have been kind of soft towards him that may join the rallying around him, but largely people are pretty well fixed on how they view Donald Trump.
Do we expect this to change anything in terms of Trump's bid for another term in the White House?
Well, that's a very fascinating question and something political reporters are going to be watching closely. For now, at the very least, this makes Donald Trump a lot stronger. He's got the rallying around. He's got a lot of fundraising coming in. He's firing off, you know, sort of heated emails about, you know, we need to defend me. And we know he's gotten a couple million dollars already since this. And it's also just kind of strengthened his already lead in the GOP primary hunt. We saw last night, for example, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, his closest competitor, very quickly issue a statement condemning the indictment and also saying that he would not participate in any efforts to extradite President Trump from his place in Florida. That stands in somewhat contrast to earlier when this all blew up, in which the governor was a little bit more reticent and slow to react.
And also, Alex, as we know, there are other investigations into Trump as well. What are you hearing about potentially other charges, other indictments down the line?
Right. Those are very much in play. He's got the January 6th Capitol riot investigation. There's also an investigation in Georgia about efforts to overturn the election there. So he's got some pretty serious things ahead of him. And this is all kind of coming together at sort of a crucial time. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out. And it's also going to test this Republican strength that we're seeing right now for Donald Trump.
Wall Street Journal national political reporter Alex Leary. Alex, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Coming up, journalists rally in support of a Wall Street Journal reporter arrested in Russia. And markets close out the first quarter of the year. More news headlines after the break.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
President Biden is calling for the release of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich after Russia arrested him on spying charges. News organizations from around the world also joined in, condemning Gershkovich's arrest. Our D.C. reporter Daniela Cheslow has more.
President Biden was asked by a reporter at the White House as he was leaving to board the Marine One helicopter for his message to Russia.
What's your message to Russia right now as they're detaining this Wall Street Journal reporter?
Let him go. We're in process.
Russian authorities arrested Gershkovich on Wednesday for alleged espionage while on a reporting trip to the provincial city of Yekaterinburg, around 800 miles east of Moscow. The Wall Street Journal denies Gershkovich did anything wrong and has called for him to be released. WSJ editor-in-chief Emma Tucker is among more than three dozen news leaders who signed a letter to Russia's U.S. ambassador calling the arrest unwarranted and unjust. The Committee to Protect Journalists organized the letter. President Jody Ginsburg.
We're hoping the letter shows to the Russian government how seriously news outlets and others take this latest move, and that they will realize that this was a mistake and release Evan as soon as possible.
As a first step, the editors say, Gershkovich must get access to an attorney provided by his employer. Russian Nobel laureate journalist Dmitry Muratov says he knew Gershkovich and he's no spy.
Gershkovich шпионом не был.
Moscow says it will provide consular access to Gershkovich in line with internal procedures, according to state media. But U.S. officials say 48 hours after the arrest, that hasn't happened. For the Wall Street Journal, I'm Daniela Cheslow in Washington.
Now on to markets. Today marks the close of the first quarter of 2023. And it's been a wild one. But despite the ups and downs, especially during the height of the banking crisis earlier this month, Wall Street showed resilience. Our markets reporter Akani Otani has more.
Given everything that went on, stocks actually had a pretty solid quarter. S&P logged a modest gain. NASDAQ did really, really well thanks to tech stocks. And I think for a lot of investors, that comes as a bit of a surprise because we had a lot of turmoil with the banking sector recently, as well as just general concerns about inflation and where the Fed is headed. I think for one, investors quickly sort of got around to the idea that regulators are able to contain the crisis. Investors for the moment seem to think that the problems that affected Signature Bank and Silicon Valley Bank seem to be largely specific to those two banks. And then, you know, for now, it seems like it's not something that's going to take down the financial system as a whole. A lot of the ups and downs that we've seen so far this year have been due to investors thinking, okay, the Fed is close to finished with this interest rate increases, and then sort of backtracking and then going back to this narrative that, okay, the Fed might be close to done. But of course, as economic data keeps coming out in the next couple of months, as Fed officials sort of continue to assess the situation, it's very possible that investors' minds will change. And that in turn could introduce some volatility in the markets again.
Social Security benefits are now projected to run out sooner than expected. Starting in 2034, the program will not have enough money to pay its beneficiaries the full amount they're entitled to, according to the latest report by the program's trustees. That's 1 year earlier than expected. An economic slowdown, persistent inflation, and weaker productivity growth have posed challenges to the program's finances. A separate report on Medicare showed that its finances are improving thanks to lower projected health care spending than in last year's report. Some electric cars currently eligible for a U.S. tax credit program may get left in the dust. The Treasury Department has set new rules for buyers to claim the full $7,500 credit, like requiring their new car's batteries to contain set amounts of components made in North America, and that critical minerals be sourced in the U.S. or in certain free trade agreement countries. Our trade and international economy reporter Yuka Hayashi says that while certain EV models will be omitted as of April 18th, the Biden administration expects the number of eligible vehicles to increase in the long run.
That is because in the past few years, particularly since the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act, investments into electric vehicle production and also battery production have been rising very quickly. In other words, we're going to have a lot more domestic plants building electric vehicles and batteries.
The new rules aim to make the U.S. less reliant on supplies shipped from China. A list of car models that qualify for the credit will be released next month. The Justice Department and the Environmental Protection Agency sued Norfolk Southern over the massive train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio last month. They allege that the discharge of pollutants, oil, and hazardous substances from the derailment violated the Clean Water Act. The lawsuit seeks financial penalties and to ensure that the railroad pays for the full cost of cleanup. A representative from Norfolk Southern said the company is working with urgency and making daily progress. And the Commerce Department says consumer spending was up in February by a seasonally adjusted 0.2%. Separately, core price increases, leaving out food and energy prices, climbed 4.6% in February from a year earlier. That's one of the Fed's preferred gauges of inflation. Taken together, these figures are possible signs of a slowing economy. And finally, for kids, sleepovers can be a chance to hang out with your friends, watch movies, indulge in snacks, and play games. But these days, slumber parties are a parenting minefield, marked by anxieties over safety, screen time, diets, and other rules. Our reporter Lane Florsheim says some parents are getting unexpected requests.
This jewelry designer, Deborah Pagani, who said that she's had parents ask if there's a water filter before. And she said the funniest thing, which was, can you imagine in the 90s, if a parent called up and was like, I just want to make sure you guys have a water filter. What type of the water are the kids drinking? And is there going to be gluten?
Parents on social media are sharing their stories about why they won't send their kids to other homes overnight using the hashtag NoSleepovers. Lane says parents can be a bit more anxious nowadays because there's just a lot more on the radar.
We live in this really information-dense age where I think parents just have a lot more awareness of things like allergies and other things that can go wrong. One of the parents I spoke with in the no sleepover kind of school of thought said, I don't have control over what happens in other people's homes. And I think that's in a nutshell. When your kid is at your own home, you have control over their cell phone and screen time. You have control over allergens and you have control over what movie they watch. And when they go over to someone else's house, you lose control of all of those things.
But Lane says the downside is that children can miss out on developing deeper connections with their peers and exposure to different cultures and cuisines. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Kate Bullivant, with help from Anthony Bancy, Julie Chang, Daniela Cheslow, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, Catherine Millsop, Alana Patterson, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.